Okay, welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 28. It's a welcome from me, Steve Litchfield in Reading.
From me, Rafe Blanford in Sussex.
And me, Ewan Spence, up in Edinburgh.
Okay, as ever, we start with some news. Trolltech. Rafe, you've got this one.
Yes, Trolltech, which is a company that Nokia is looking to acquire, they've now got clearance from the EU competition authorities to basically go ahead with the acquisition. Actually, I suspect it's now been completed because June 6th was selected as the date for purchasing shares and doing the final bits of agreement. Trolltech is significant because it's going to be very important in Nokia's future software strategy. As you may know, Trolltech, one of the main reasons Nokia bought them is for their Qt technology, and this is basically a cross-platform graphics library which will be important in the future as Nokia looks to increasingly create more software that works across multiple platforms. And to do that, they're going to have a developer environment. There's still questions as to how it's going to work in terms of availability internally and externally, but what they'll be able to do is create software that runs across mobile platforms such as S60, MAMO, Series 40, but also across PC platforms such as Windows and Linux. And it's interesting to see this one, you know, finally get approved, and it's one of the two of the significant acquisitions that Nokia made or sort of announced at the beginning or last year, and the other one of course is Navtech, which is still going through the approval process with the EU. But it's interesting to note that Trolltech has now effectively been completed, and I suspect we'll be hearing a lot more about that in the future.
Yeah, good stuff. Ewan, you've been you're always the main man at these our own pub meet each autumn, and I gather Symbian have now announced the dates for their show, which means we can announce the dates for our pub meet. So just get people, put it in their diary. Do you have the dates to hand?
Yes, the dates for Symbian's smartphone show have been announced for this year. It's the 21st and 22nd of October, again Tuesday and Wednesday, which means the traditional All About Symbian pub meet penciled in for Monday the 20th of October. Now, location's all going to change this year. This is probably the big thing for people to remember when they're booking hotels and turning out. This year, the Symbian smartphone show is no longer out at the XL Centre at Docklands, right next to London City Airport. It's actually in the, I'd say, the heart of London, but it's just slightly to the west of it. But it's in Earl's Court this year, which is a much larger space. It's a much more recognised big venue for conferencing. What that's going to do to the feel of the show, I don't know. It's certainly going to shake it up and get to have a look at things. And obviously it means that we may well have to choose another location for the pub that we have. The other part of the show this year is the Mobile Dev Fest. It's been giving equal prominence on the website. Build is a dedicated arena for developers to learn, meet, showcase and share ideas. It does feel that they're kind of splitting out the two sort of threads that we've always seen at the smartphone show, which is the sort of hardware and the manufacturers and also the software and the developers and such like. So giving them out equal prominence in both parts, but probably, I suspect, still under the same floor in the same conference hall.
Okay, yeah, and the pub meet beforehand, of course, is a Be There or Be Square event. This is probably one of the highlights of my year, which what that says about my sad social life, I really don't know, but I always look forward to it anyway. So make sure you're there this year. Rafe, some news from Nokia, Mail for Exchange 2.5.
Yes, that's right, Steve. Mail for Exchange 2.5 is, I think, an important piece of software. This is the stuff that's used to sync with a Microsoft Exchange server. And new in this version is basically better support for Exchange 2007, notably the ability to set follow-up tags, as well as set an auto-reply out-of-office message directly from the device. However, perhaps the most interesting bit of this is now supports S60 third edition feature pack 2 devices such as the N78, N96 and the 6220 and other such devices. So if you were picking up a new device, one of the things I noted earlier that these devices weren't supported, they now are. If you get that installed, you'll have access to a number of new features. And if you look on All About Symbian, there's a link of interest going to eseries.org where there's some more information about the new version. So it's good to see one of these standard tools get another update from Nokia.
Yeah, the average end user is not going to make much use of this, but for integrating a fairly high-priced smartphone into a company environment, this sort of software update is very much well.
For the enterprise, something like Exchange Sync is absolutely essential. That's basically the raison d'etre for most mobile devices in the enterprise environment. Of course, you do get bespoke applications as well. And I still feel that Windows Mobile in particular is ahead in terms of enterprise email on the mobile platform. It gives a better overall experience. With Windows 6.1, some of the updates that were included there are very good. Incidentally, if you're looking for the best mobile experience, I suspect RoadSync are probably still there, mainly because of their support for folders and the better support for search on server. So those are the two options if you're running an S60 device, either the free Mail for Exchange from Nokia or RoadSync from DataViz. But as I say, I don't think either of them quite measure up to Windows Mobile. But of course, when you're buying a device, you have to compromise in different places, and there's any number of factors that might lead to your purchase decision.
Okay, moving on to the next item of news. There's some new Nokia E90 firmware out there about just over a week ago, version 210.34.75, which sounds rather techy and not very exciting. But the previous firmware was a firmware that was never really firmware. Nokia apparently released it V200 for their beta testers, but they released it through Nokia software update, and all of us got up in arms saying, this is wonderful, and then found out it was buggy. So they've finally released the V210 firmware, including Flashlight 3 in the browser, and many other enhancements. Just one tip, there's an article on the site I posted about hard resetting your E90 after the update, just to make sure it initializes properly. And if it doesn't initialize properly, you'll know it because YouTube videos won't work. And one other final tip I must just put in, I know Anthony Pranata's put up a blog post yesterday, but I was talking about this a few weeks ago, so I'm going to claim credit. Windows Vista is not officially supported for Nokia software update, but if you run Vista, do what I do, go into, on your hard disk, go into Program Files, Nokia Software Updater, and find the file nsu_ui_client.exe. You can't miss it, it's got a big green icon. Right click on it, choose Properties, and then there's a Compatibility tab. Tap on that, or click on that, and then click the box saying run this program in compatibility mode 4 and choose Windows XP Service Pack 2, all of which basically means that NSU thinks you've got a Windows XP computer and it runs quite happily. Now, of course, Nokia obviously pulled the Vista support for a reason, so there must be something dodgy going on, but I have to say that on my Vista box, I've updated several S60 smartphones with no problems whatsoever using this technique. So there you are, new E90 firmware and a tip for people using Windows Vista. Now, we have two main sections in the insight we often use, discussion and waffle. I'm not quite sure which is which and what the differences are, but before we go into either of those, just to make sure we don't miss them, I'd like to just skip ahead to software. I'll kick off so that Ewan gets his chance to think about what he's going to talk about, but I just want to briefly mention Google Search, just a shout out for that. Google released this native search utility. We've mentioned it a few months ago on All About Symbian in the podcast. Basically, it sits on your standby screen, either on a hotkey press or on some devices you actually have to put it as one of the standby icons. It's a native program, and the moment you initialize it, you start it up, it sets off an internet connection, so that's ready and waiting. You type in your search string, and off it goes, and you're instantly in the search matches in the browser. Now, the reason I'm giving it another shout out, another mention, is that I cannot for the life of me see why Google don't use the fact that they can already integrate their software with the built-in GPS. More and more S60 smartphones are coming with GPS. Why, oh why, and how long will it take them to take that GPS integration, combine it with this native search utility, so that in addition to setting off the internet connection, it also grabs your current location on the planet, so that when you do a search, the matches are also geographically relevant, sorted by location and sorted by what's around you, the weather around you, news around you, places around you, and so on. So this is a shout out for utility that's not quite there yet, but I really, really hope Google are listening to this, or someone picks up on this and does something in terms of integrating GPS. Rafe, something about cell location. I think
just to point out, because it's a Symbian C++ application, they could just as easily get the cell ID from the phone and send that off, so it doesn't even have to be GPS. And for something like a local search, cell location, which in a rural area may be as much as a couple of kilometres, but in a city will be generally 100 metres or so, will be more than adequate for local search. So why they don't pass that information over and just have it geocoded on the Google servers. Presumably, if they've got this stuff for Google Maps available, you know, it wouldn't be difficult to geocode this into a specific location string that they could then use within the local search. So, I agree with you, Steve. I'm surprised I haven't seen this.
Yeah, of course, as Riff's saying, the size of a cell area does vary. Where I live, it's around about half a mile, a circle of half a mile in radius. I suspect in the middle of London, you're talking about a couple of hundred metres. And I know that at my parents' house in Somerset, you're talking about 2 or 3 miles, which is, but it's still good enough. But as you say, there's no reason why they can't use either of these two. Ewan, you've got an opinion on this?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be something incredibly simple. Is once they get location-based advertising in place, once the money starts flowing in, then they'll devote engineering time to this. At the moment, Google is a public company. It has to make money. Getting people using search gets them money and earns them money. The location-based search at the moment, I don't think earns any money for Google. And I think when it does, that's when we'll see it hit the mobile devices.
Well, I'd disagree with Ewan, simply because, you know, Google Maps for mobile is out there already. It's not making any money for them. And it's important that Google starts getting mindshare now, and they should create the best experience possible on local search. And really, I suspect this is a case of it hasn't necessarily been thought through fully, or it's a case of let's do phase one, which is just search, and then we'll add in location stuff later. But given they've already done the exact same technology and you'll be using very similar code to what they've used in Google Maps, there really is no excuse not to have it in Google Search as soon as possible.
Yeah, certainly seems very clumsy to go into effectively the mobile website of Google and have to physically click on a link to add in your location by typing in a town or a postcode, when the software knows, the phone knows where you are exactly in two different ways. But okay, the rant over. The Google, I hope you're listening. Ewan, you've got a game you wanted to shout out.
Well, it's more a case of my wife needs to shout it out. Marble Maze, which Steve reviewed last week on the site. Very simply, it's a maze and you roll a marble around it rather than use the cursor key. So it's one of these early pioneering games. It's using the sensor technology and specifically the accelerometers on the S60 devices. It lets you know, let's the game know what way your phone's been tilted. So to move the marble to the left, you tilt your phone to the left. To move the marble down the game area, you tilt your phone down. It's very much like the old wooden puzzle games with the holes drilled in them. It plays exactly the same way. And what I love about this is twofold. The first one is it's using an alternate input mechanism, which is accelerometers. But secondly, it's also giving you feedback. Whenever your marble hits a wall or the side, you get a little nudge in your hand just from the vibration ring tone alerts that the phone has, and this actually creates a very compelling experience. I sound like a marketing now, and it just works. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what all the game designers, specifically the hobbyists and the freeware developers, are going to make when S60 and the sensor technology comes along. We've already seen, you know, stuff that's just wonderful. I mean, last minute, I've been demonstrating around the London Tech Circuit Bluetooth sword fighting. I mean, essentially it's a game of scissors, paper, stone, and you do it by holding your phone up to the left or forward, and the three different planes reflect scissors, paper, stones, and you pair it up with another handset and you literally have a sword fight doing scissors, paper, stones. And it has all they play all the relevant noises. So if it's a clash, then you'll hear the sound of a sword clash, and if it's a strike, you hear blood curdling yell. But much as N-Gage, you know, it's going to have the big game developers, I think we're really going to see the innovation and really strange, funky, weird, why didn't I think of that way of playing games, done by the independent developers. Marble Maze itself was originally out on Apple's iPhone. It's now over to the Nokias. And I love this idea of a different way of playing games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are more and more games using more and more of the sensors. There was an original demo where you went around shooting, was it mosquitoes, and you using the camera software overlaid on the real world view. So it seemed as if you were shooting virtual mosquitoes in your real world. And it's that type of thing. I know they seem gimmicky, but there's tremendous potential there for real games that are a real sense of involvement. And of course, there are multiplayer games as well, based on GPS and camera and accelerometers, not just fighting with Star Wars lightsabers, but actually out there, you know, playing capture the flag and people running around getting involved and actually helping them communicate with each other and have fun together, which of course is what it's all about. Just move on now to one of our software topics for discussion. I remember in the old days when I used to have a Scion Palm Top, there's the obligatory Scion mention, Ewan, they were very much standalone devices, and when they finally got email and web, I was very excited, they could now reach out into the world. More and more now, over the last 10 years, we've seen software and hardware integrating not just what you've got locally, but what you've got on the internet, what you've got on the PC, and bringing it all into a coherent whole that works together. Rafe, you've been playing with the N78, and you've been seeing more and more of this.
Yes, and actually I think it goes beyond what you were just saying. I mean, with the sort of connected mobile device, you know, it has fundamentally changed in that, you know, we're now used to pulling information down onto the device from the web, and also from email, obviously. But the thing was, it was still a relatively isolated experience in that most of what you did was done on the device, and there wasn't a lot of traffic going the other way, if you like, going out from the device. You know, email being an obvious exception. But what struck me about the N78, and I'll talk about this in a future insight in terms of the review, and there'll be a review of the N78 on the website in due course. But what really caught my mind about this was that, you know, increasingly, and I think the N78 is just, part of the trend of this, is that, you know, S60 or Symbian as a platform, it isn't isolated anymore. These aren't just standalone devices that you expect to do everything on. They're becoming part of a constellation of platforms, if you will. So when I talk about this, what I mean is there's far better integration with the PC and the web. I would add the caveat that Nokia does acknowledge the fact that you do need to be able to do everything that you can possibly on the mobile device, because there are some markets where there'll be relatively limited integration with the PC. So you shouldn't necessarily assume PC sync, but if it is there, it's much better than it used to be. But the more interesting one in some ways is, of course, the idea of connecting or syncing with the web. And I'll come back to that in a minute. I just want to talk about some of the web stuff, some of the PC stuff first, with the N78, and I'm sure you guys remember back in the Scion days, in the early days of Series 60 and UIQ, when they were really was called Series 60. I'm thinking the 7650, the 3650, and the 6600. You know, the PC sync experience just wasn't that good. It often went wrong. If you wanted to do it over Bluetooth, you were being particularly adventurous. It was very much restricted in terms of how reliable it could be. And these days I think PC sync is basically rock solid, at least on the Windows platform. And there are options out there for Mac with iSync, and to a lesser extent Linux as well. But I think now PC Suite's become pretty much an essential companion. It's still not perfect, and I'm sure we'll get some comments back that I like it doesn't do X, Y, and Z properly, but on the whole, sort of the contacts and the calendar sync now is first rate. But it's extending beyond that. We're having applications, one that ships out of the box with the N78 is Nokia Photos. It's been available for a little while now, but this is the first time, as far as I'm aware, that Nokia Photos has shipped with a device, and this provides much, much better photo sync with a PC. For example, if you create an album in the Nokia Photos application on the N78 and add tag information to a photo, that'll actually be transferred back to the device, so you'll get that same tag and album structure on the device and on the PC.
Sorry to interrupt, Rafe. Are we talking about the N series suite, PC suite here, or the standard PC suite?
It's Nokia.
Right, 10 seconds of silence, then Rafe can answer. 10 seconds of silence, then Rafe can answer. Yeah.
It's neither PC suite, Steve. It's Nokia Photos application specifically. So what this is just I should explain that there are two versions of PC Suite. One is plain PC Suite, if you like, and one is N-Series PC Suite. Really, the difference between them is more in the branding of them and the look of the graphical user interface. Under the hood, there really isn't much difference between them. You're quite right, the N78 does actually ship with the N-Series PC Suite, and as part of that, Nokia Photos is bundled into that. But it's actually a standalone application, and is available regardless of what version of PC Suite you're running on. And we're seeing exactly the same thing with something that's currently in the beta labs at Nokia, which is the Nokia Music PC Suite, the Nokia Music application for PC. and that basically does the same thing, but it's for music and will eventually integrate with the Nokia Music Store. We did talk about a little bit about that in a previous podcast, but I think it's part of the same trend for much better integration with the PC. But of course, what I think is the most relevant, and it really ties back into what we've talked a lot about over the last 6 months or so, and that is, of course, Ovi, and that's the web integration, if you like, and the idea that, you know, your device is basically just your mobile access client to lots of stuff that's going on the web, and be that, you know, photos on Flickr or social networking. And we're just getting the first glimmers of this, you know, being properly implemented, I think. And Share Online is the obvious example of this, the way it ties in with Flickr and Share on Ovi. And that's not just for, you know, sending photos out as an application something like shows you, but it also allows you to pull photos back in the other way. So you can subscribe to specific feeds, or you get generic feeds of your own photos. You can add comments or read comments on your photos. So I think we'll see a lot more of that. And it's possible to see that in other areas of the device as well. So this is what I mean when I say, you know, I think it's no longer an isolated experience using a smartphone. You know, there's a much more profound sense that you're using it as part of a, so I say, a constellation of platforms, and your mobile device is just slotting into your digital life or your digital footprint, rather than being, I think, a companion that's sort of a little bit on the isolated side. And that's a big change, I think, that's coming. You know, we're used to using, you know, these devices, relatively speaking, in isolation, but the reality is, of course, they should be part of your whole digital experience, and you shouldn't really think, oh, this is just confined to my mobile, or this is just confined to the web or PC. You know, they should really just be, you know, in one sense Nokia says it's not about devices anymore. Well, in another sense it is, but it is just a device, and what you want to do on it is really should be any part of your digital life. So, you know, I'm waffling rather here, and I should probably say that the difference between a discussion and a waffle on the podcast is that Rafe waffles and that Ewan and Steve discuss in a much more concise manner. But as I say, it's not the N78 in particular that led me to this, but I do think we're seeing, basically because it's the most recent device, you know, the truest expression of this. And the N78 also, as a sort of entry-level N-series device, is something that's going to take this message to the, you know, wider market far more than something like, you know, the N96 or even the N95. You know, you're going to get a lot more people who perhaps haven't thought about this thing, aren't necessarily the technology leaders or early adopters that is typically targeted by the N-series. And people will start to realize that, you know, their mobile phone isn't something that is just a relatively isolated device. It's part of their whole digital experience. And, you know, we've seen this trend coming for a long time. You know, one sense, the hardware convergence of MP3 players and cameras is part of that. But even so, you know, there's been a lot of comments about, you know, it's difficult to get music onto the device, or it's difficult to get photos off the device. You know, and I think, you know, with Nokia, that in the last few years we've seen a lot of this, let's say Share Online's example, you know, Print Express, whereby you can send photos to get printed from your phone, is part of that. But the integration, especially with the web, which we're seeing now, and I think we'll just see more of over the next year, is really the big sort of, if you like, the mega trend in mobile platforms. And I expect to see a lot more of it. And it was just interesting that, you know, the N78 really highlighted this for me. And as I say, it's important partly because of the N78 positioning. And I know it's something we've talked a lot about, but, you know, seeing it actually as something that's available on the market rather than a theoretical concept, I think is quite exciting.
Yes, I have to say that with all this online integration, which is all wonderful, by the way, but I really do hope that operators are a bit clearer about their data charges and that this flat rate data and sensible data packages do start to become the norm, because I do worry, every time I use Share Online or something which involves heavy uploads or downloads, you do start to wonder about whether you've exceeded your limit for the day or your limit for the month or whatever. So I think that the overhauling of the data structure within our operators is really essential if this thing is to really hit the mainstream. I'm going to move on to briefly to some statistics. There's lies, lies, damn lies and statistics. I think that was the famous quote. Gartner recently released a report a few days ago, and Apple Insider very kindly paid for the report, the thousands of pounds for it, and issued a summary of the smartphone sales in the first quarter of 2008, which makes very interesting reading indeed. Ewan, have you got any opinions on them, and would you like to just share some of the stats?
Well, my initial opinion on this one was simply, so how are Gartner defining a smartphone here? Because the top five are Nokia. Sorry, let's go back a step. These are for the quarter one 2008 unit sales. So Nokia was 14.5 million. Research and Motion with the Blackberries was second with 4.3 million. Apple was third with 1.7 million. Sharp at 1.3 million. Fujitsu at 1.3 million. And everybody else is just a tad under 9 million. So 32 million smartphone sales in Q1. So yeah, the first thing is, well, how are you defining a smartphone? And because, you know, it is damn lies and statistics. But the numbers, they're really to be expected. Nokia nicely up there, 45% market share, which is similar to Gartner's study from about a week ago of overall phone sales. So it's reasonably there. But of course, in that one, Samsung was much higher up as well. And we already know Samsung are making a big play with the S60s. So I'd expect to see Samsung in this sort of table next year. Apple. Something's happening with Apple this week, so really, we're not going to comment because we'll look either A, bitter and twisted, or B, wrong. So let's just draw a veil over that one.
I don't mind being bitter and twisted because I'm going to predict that yet again the Apple iPhone is going to get a shed load of attention, and yet again most people are going to miss some of the obvious facts about it's not just about devices, the smartphone market. I have no doubt that they're going to produce some really shiny, whizzy things, but at the end of the day, I really don't think it will change anything, and Apple still has a big struggle to survive in the mobile market in the long term. Right, I'm bitter and twisted as a Symbian hack, obviously, but I think you have to perhaps look beyond some of the media hype that will no doubt go on in the next week. Right, moan over.
So just to go back to that, the definition of discussion is where we look at something critically and draw through the veils. And when someone wants to have a rant, generally they're standing there with a metaphorical baseball bat in their hands. Isn't that right, Rafe?
That's absolutely right. And just to take it back on topic and pretend that I can be serious as well, just point out in the table that you've been talking about, Sharp and Fujitsu at the number 4 and 5 spot. And does anyone know why they're there? And I wouldn't know the answer, so I'm asking a leading question here.
I'm going to take Fujitsu. They produce their Lux range of PDA phones and smartphones on the Windows Mobile platform, which are sold pretty well because they're fairly lowly, fairly reasonable price for their high specs. So I'm guessing it's mainly them. Ewan, any thoughts on Sharp? Take that as a no.
No.
Well, I'll give you the answer, and it's actually pretty good. You've given me a really good lead into this, and actually both the Sharp and Fujitsu numbers are down to their sales of smartphones in Japan on the MOAP platform with on NTT Docomo's FOMA network. So that's the reason both of them have got those sales numbers, and it's something that
on
people
on
often
Symbian, of course. Yeah.
Exactly, it's running on Symbian. It's something that people often forget. As you rightly say, there are I think it's from both Sharp and Fujitsu, there are some other devices, but relatively speaking, the majority of those are the Symbian devices in Japan. And it's worth pointing out, because if you combine those together, that's 2.6 million, which is actually quite a lot of devices. You know, that puts it firmly into, you know, the third place spot. And it just goes to show you that, you know, in order to understand the global smartphone market, you do have to sort of have a very global view. At the same time, I would also point out, coming back to what Ewan said about definitions, is neither of those are an open platform in the sense of S60 being an open platform. You can't actually install third-party applications onto them. They're open in the sense that the platform they're running is Symbian, and operators, in this case NTT Docomo, can add on their own software rather than something that's provided within the software platform or the operating system layer. And of course, Apple, until tomorrow or today, will also fall into that category in terms of openness. They of course are expected to add in software via their SDK basically from now onwards, but as Ewan quite rightly says, there is a definition problem, and actually I wouldn't necessarily include Sharp and Fujitsu in a table of smartphones, and I think really smartphones is a complete misnomer now, and you're far better off calling them an open software platform. and having different definitions for ones which are open in the sense that consumers are open and can add third-party software, and open for device manufacturers to add, or operators to add, their own custom software. And I think in the future that's the sort of distinction that we'll need between open to consumers, open to manufacturers, and then closed. And that's a personal opinion, but as with all of these statistics, there is certainly a problem with this this definition stuff.
Yeah, I'm guessing that this time next year there won't even be a table for smartphones. I'm going to just go out on a limb here, and I think the convergence of phones to smartphones to media phones, whatever you want to call them, I think they're all converging. You take an example of a feature phone, which you definitely a Nokia Series 40 dumb phone that you get for pay as you go for 70 quid or free on in the most minimal contract. The Nokia Series 40 these days is very, very highly featured, and you can add almost any Java application you want, including things like Google Maps. And I have to say that specking up something like a Series 40 phone in that way, you can get pretty darn close to a lot of the things that I use for example, my Nokia N95 for. And this is on a £70, no contract, pay-as-you-go, dumb phone. I think the whole concept of smartphones, I was a great champion of smartphones for many years, and I still love the concept. The problem is that the phones themselves, feature phones, have been rising and rising and rising. Apple's iPhone is a kind of off-the-wall example, but again, that's risen up from being a feature phone, and as of 6 p.m. tonight, it will be a fully top-of-the-range, effectively, smartphone. I think the whole concept is going to change and transmogrify, and I think this time next year there will only be the stat table for overall phone sales, and we'll be calling them phones. Interestingly, looking at that table of Q1 smartphone stats, Nokia never ever, to my knowledge, call their devices smartphones anymore. They only call them phones, and in some cases multimedia computers, but nobody actually uses that term because it's too long. They just call them phones. Apple just call it their iPhone, it's the iPhone, as if they've invented a new genre, interestingly. But when pushed, they too admit they just sell phones. Research and Motion, doing the BlackBerry, they actually do call everything they sell a smartphone, but I think they're kind of riding a wave that was rising 2 years ago, and they're a bit behind the times here. They've been doing very, very well with their BlackBerrys because they've improved the rate at which they're improving their hardware, but I think their sales will slow down at some point. Rafe, you got any more opinions on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, you know, I agree with you about the smartphone term. I think it's, you know, just going to be shorthand for open mobile platform, and then we said even that's tricky to define. But what I think is important to see here, or rather interesting, if we look at history, you know, this promise of the smartphone was basically about being able to install third-party software like your PC, and that was really trumpeted by Symbian, by Microsoft, and, you know, Palm in particular, I think, you know, had success with this and trumpeted it. And yet the reality has been rather different, I feel, and there has been a change. And I'm the first person to admit I've been somewhat surprised by this, but, you know, the advantage of the open platform hasn't been for the end consumer. It's really been for the manufacturer and the operator in terms of being able to reduce the cost of developing, testing and releasing devices. And what I mean by that is when you have a platform phone, obviously some of the testing that you may have to do compared to having two different phones is much reduced. And also for someone like an operator, if they want to add on an extra bit of software, and you can think of any number of these, you know, Orange, for example, with their video and photos applications, or their music store, or Tim in Italy with their sort of web suite clients. If you've got a single platform, it's much easier to add those just, you know, by literally specifying an extra install before you release all the devices, you know, and that's why we've seen S60 become a preferred platform for operators. So, you know, that the advantage has moved away from consumers, and I think that will always still apply. And, you know, especially as the devices get more complicated, that advantage is only going to become even stronger. I wouldn't write off, you know, third-party software altogether, because I think that still is important, but I think it's just going to be a longer road and less important than people maybe originally imagined. And just want to, you know, reinforce what Steve was saying about, you know, the devices. I think, you know, one of the strongest signs of this, and, you know, best example is actually with Sony Ericsson. If you look at their G series phones, the G700 and G900, which are just about to come onto the market, look and behave exactly like some of their feature phones, and I think most people would have difficulty telling the difference. And Sony Ericsson has a particularly strong feature phone platform in terms of competencies and functionality. And for them, you know, the platform is far more about the advantages that platform can bring later on for operators and manufacturers, because, you know, as far as the end consumer is concerned, you know, they have very similar capabilities. Do I think third-party software can make a comeback? Yeah, yes, I do. I think it is still important, but it isn't going to be sort of the reason to create smartphones, or rather open platform phones, isn't about third-party software. That's just one string in the bow, if you like. So yes, you know, I really agree with what Steven said, and it is dynamic and changing. I know, and it's very different from what we thought was, you know, 5 years ago. And given that the 10th anniversary of Symbian is coming up, you know, when Symbian began, it was all about, if you like, you know, bringing the flexibility of third-party software on PCs to smartphones, and that would create the ultimate user experience because people will be able to pick and choose what they like. And I think now, excuse me, in the second 10 years of Symbian's life, you know, that's still there, but there's also a message that open platforms, you know, offer cost and time savings for releasing devices. I think a lot of that's because, you know, the software promise that there is moving onto the web as a platform, and therefore the native application perhaps becomes less important. That's, you know, more waffling, forward-looking, but I think there's, you know, plenty of discussion around this topic to come.
Okay, well, Rafe takes a breath and grabs a glass of water. Ewan, do you want to take a brief point before we close?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that Rafe makes some very accurate points, and they're all true, that Symbian has kind of, in a way, replicated the PC market, but again, for the manufacturer, not for the end user. The advantage in the PC business is you can buy a box, you buy, you know, off-the-shelf CPU, circuit boards, componentry, hard drives, stuff, chuck them in, put the operating system on the top. Microsoft Windows XP and Windows Vista, for all everybody complains about it, imagine a world where everybody ran their own version of Linux, and it would be an absolute mess. Symbian's trying to bring that same sort of consistency that Microsoft did to the desktop to the smartphone. The fact that they're now seen as a vital component, although not necessarily as a leading component, I think is testament to their strength. They're sitting there in the background doing all the really complicated stuff, to the point of speeding up how things are deleted, the free play that we saw coming through, all the pre-integration that's coming from Symbian as an operating system that has partners with Texas Instruments, that has partnerships with people who are doing things like Exchange Server software and everything. I think that we don't see that. And the point is, end users are not meant to see that. They're meant to see a phone that looks like the last one and does the same stuff as the last one and also has some extra applications as well. Symbian delivers that. Manufacturers don't have to spend time winding up an operating system for a phone. That's the big problem with Linux smartphones at the moment. There isn't one person investing a huge amount of money doing a big, consistent smartphone operating system under Linux. That's what Symbian's been doing publicly for almost 10 years. That's why things like the Nokia 60 can have massive amounts of multiple threads. That's why UIQ can take all the inputs and everything. That's why something like the iPhone in its first build could only have 4 active threads at any one time. Apple haven't got around to building a robust mobile operating system yet, and it's going to take them, on previous form, 10 years.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure about the 10 years timescale. We shall see tonight quite what the latest roadmap and the latest plans are. I suspect it'll may come quite a bit sooner than that. But yes, Symbian has certainly got a huge head start with all their next generation technologies, ScreenPlay, Freeway, and so on, and LBS, of course, the location-based stuff. I think we'll have to wrap this inside up, guys, and maybe carry on next week. There's so much we could talk about on this topic. There'll be plenty to talk about next week. Hopefully we can time it, Rafe, so that we can encompass the launch of the alleged E66 and E71.
I think that might be a fortnight's time, Steve. But yes, we'll see what we can do.
I guess it depends whether we get around to recording on the Friday or the Monday. Who knows? We may even record live from the event. Rafe and I will be at Nokia's business launch next. By the time you hear this, it'll be more or less a week away, so we'll see what we can do for you. Anyway, thanks, guys. Thanks to Rafe and Ewan. Do you want to say goodbye, guys?
Cheers, Steve.
Goodbye, guys.
Right, see you next time.